Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies, blueprints. I interview experts. I tell stories about what worked, but also I share some of my epic fails I've made along the way. Because ultimately, I truly believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And today, I want to talk about this idea of mistakes, failed experiments, things that didn't go right, and why those are actually a part of the innovation process. I'm going to be talking about this idea of teaching in beta. But before we get started, I want to share with you something that I mentioned on my last podcast. If you go to my website and go under articles, you'll find it right there on the blog post right before this one. It is the Creative Momentum Journal. There's information about how you can download it and print it for free. There's also information on how you could buy it on Amazon as a hardback journal. Might be a fun kind of gift idea or something that you could give to yourself at the start of the new year as you think about this idea of doing creative work in the upcoming year. Again, it is the Creative Momentum Journal, and I hope you enjoy using it as much as we enjoyed making it. It has been a blast. In my first year of teaching, my mentor said something that I'll never forget. I taught a lesson that tanked. I mean, it was awful. I literally did everything wrong possible. It was the cringiest of cringe, and I shared every single detail with him over coffee. I expected specific advice on how to fix the lesson, but instead, this is what he said to me. John, learning is like a seed. It's a mystery. And some teachers are like water. They nourish. They build relationships. They help students develop soft skills. Others are like light. They impart wisdom. They stretch your thinking and push you intellectually. So it's like a greenhouse? I asked. Yes, but let me finish. There's a third type. These teachers are total crap. I mean, total crap. The lessons stink. It's a total mess. Nothing works. Oh? I asked. Yeah. But here's the thing. Kids need all of those. They need relationships and soft skills. They need critical thinking and academic achievement, but they also need to handle some crap to grow resilient. I sat there silently thinking about my crappy lesson plans before he finally said, and John, here's the hard truth. You'll always be all three of those teachers, no matter how long you've taught. Light, water, crap, you're always going to be all of the above. That's right. Sometimes we need the crap that becomes fertilizer for growth. Our humanity is a gift to our students. And I think that's part of why there is a power in owning our mistakes. My good friend Javi was one of those teachers who looked like a master teacher in his second year in the classroom. He was open to new ideas, but quick to abandon a strategy that didn't work out, and he would take a different route. He had a positive classroom culture, but also strong classroom management. His students were highly engaged in meaningful projects, but he also knew how to provide clear, concrete, direct instruction. I often wandered into his classroom during my prep period to observe and learn from him. Just kidding. I was totally stealing ideas. And he had this slightly unusual classroom tradition. At the end of certain lessons, he would ask his students to share their epic fails. This was a closing activity he used a few times a week to help his students take creative risks and develop a growth mindset. Think about his student population. They were mostly ELL students, and this strategy was really designed to reduce the affective filter so they would be unafraid to make mistakes. He gave them the following sentence stems. Today, my epic fail was blank. I learned blank. Next time, I will try blank. In pairs, students shared their epic fail. The student listening would then say, thank you for being brave. And they would share their epic fail as well. Some students scoffed at this activity in the first week of school. The being brave thing felt a little over the top for seventh grade. But slowly they began to own this notion of bravery and the power of vulnerability. On one particular day, he ran through this activity and then he pulled out the popsicle stick. Javier, is there a Javier here? He shook his head. Javi, maybe? The students looked around in confusion. There was no Javier in that classroom. He stops Oh, wait! That's my name, he said with a smile. He then explained his epic fail, the way he had taught vocabulary, and what he learned from it. He talked about what he would try next time. And his students then stood up and gave him a standing ovation, which was the class ritual for the person that shares their epic fail aloud. As the students filed out of the classroom, I said, dude, Javi, I can't believe you got a group of seventh graders to cheer for your crappy vocabulary lesson. Maybe, he said. But a group of 30 seventh graders just saw an adult who cares about them enough to own his mistakes and tell them what he will do to improve. They learned that their teacher is willing to take creative risks. And it has me thinking about the end of the semester and what it means for us to reflect on our failed projects. See, I'm a maker. I often make blog posts and books and sketch videos, but I also like making STEM projects at home and doing home improvement projects. I love doing projects. But sometimes I have projects that just don't work out. I used to feel guilty about these projects. Like somehow I was a quitter if I didn't finish everything. I'd feel like if I really stuck with it, it should have worked. But as I've begun to interview painters and engineers and filmmakers and architects and entrepreneurs, I have found that this is a universal part of the creative experience. To be productive, you have to be good at quitting. You have to know when a project isn't working and cut it loose. I've come to realize that every maker has a cutting room floor with a ton of abandoned work that didn't make the final cut. We iterate and revise and put things on hold, and the thing is, that's okay. That is all part of the universal creative journey. We all go through that. I want you to imagine a continuum. And on the left-hand side, we have trash it. And on the right-hand side, we have keep it, okay? There's this continuum of what we do with the projects that we've done, what we do with the strategies that we've used. And in particular, when we think about project-based learning, which is often the topic of this podcast, I think this continuum helps make sense out of what to do in the future. So we have scrap it on one hand. This is ditch the project. It was a failed concept and you learned from it. It was an experiment and it just didn't work. And then we have redesign. Keep the core idea, but completely overhaul the project with huge changes. Make those big changes. Then we have revise it. So instead of a redesign, we're going to do a revision. Keep the project, but next time that you do it, repeat it with significant changes to take it to the next level. And then we have refine it. Keep the project, repeat it, but make some tweaks in order to improve it for the next year. Note that some of the most prolific creative types of all kinds of projects will end up having projects that fit those four different categories. Being prolific isn't about avoiding failed projects. It's about continuing to try new things even when the projects seem to have tanked. If we think about project-based learning, as a teacher, you're going to have times when projects fail. Students might be disinterested or unmotivated, or the project starts taking way too long and it doesn't seem to work, or maybe there's alignment issues, or it's not actually hitting the standards that you anticipated. Whatever it may be, it's okay to scrap it. And it's okay sometimes to take a great project and do it the next year and simply refine it. This continuum is there for a reason. That being innovative in our practice means sometimes we will scrap things that didn't work and we will learn from it. And sometimes we'll use something again, and that's a beautiful part of the process too. If it seems tough to figure out when we should or shouldn't abandon a project, it might help to ask ourselves some reflection questions. So the following are some questions that you might ask yourself during or even after a project. Why do I feel like this project isn't working? Is this something I can tweak or revise, or do I need to abandon the whole thing? Could we try this again later? What are the contextual factors making this a challenge? How could I address these challenges at a different time? Is there a better way to teach the standards, a new project concept, a new approach, or maybe not using PBL for this particular unit? How will students respond if I do have to cancel a project? Will they be relieved or will they be disappointed? And how do I help them navigate these emotions? And I want to point out another thing about this. When we think about the water and the light and the yes, crap, it's oftentimes not as easy as good versus bad. The truth is, most things that we do are contextual. They work in one moment and then they don't work in another moment. That's all part of the art of teaching. This is why I think it helps to teach in a beta mindset. Here's what I mean. If we think about the beta mindset, it's the idea that you release your work in a beta version. I'm not referring to the 1980s videotapes that I had. I mean, we had a Betamax, video player, I guess, not a VHS. We chose the wrong one when I was a kid at first. But if we think about beta releases, not in terms of Betamax, but more in terms of the beta releases of software, the beta is simply your earliest version. And it's going to have bugs and it's going to have things that don't work. And sometimes it's going to be a failed experiment. So releasing your work in beta as a teacher means knowing that it's not going to be perfect. And perhaps at times it's not even going to be very good. You're going to send it to an audience, in this case your students, play around with it, let them see what works and what doesn't work, and you're going to develop empathy. You're going to listen to them. You're going to gain feedback from your students. And from there, you're going to revise your design. That design is then going to become your next beta release. You'll send it back to an audience for feedback and design, and you end up with this ongoing feedback loop. One of the things I've been doing for a long time as a teacher is to have these surveys that students fill out. And sometimes it's an engagement survey. Sometimes it's, did this strategy work for you? Did it not work for you? Sometimes it's, what are the pain points that you experience? But having these surveys helps me revise and improve my craft as a teacher. The beta mindset says, I'm not going to wait until it's perfect to try it out. I'm going to try it out even though I'm nervous about how it's going to work. Because ultimately, this experimentation is how I figure out if it works. But it also means listening to your students. You're open to their feedback. You might pull students aside for a conference. You might do student surveys. But this feedback fuels your self-reflection. And then you're again able to release it in beta, and you end up with multiple versions. And this could be multiple projects that you do year after year and revise and improve your projects. This could be for strategies that you're using, for approaches that you're using. This beta mindset can encompass so much of what we do in our practice. If you think about it this way, when you have this beta mindset, you're able to model creative risk-taking for your students. You're able to show them that it's not a bad thing to take creative risks. When you solicit student feedback, you're more humble and approachable. Students are more empowered while they are showing their teacher more respect. Teaching remains fresh. You don't fall into the zone of having it all figured out. You don't have to have it all figured out. This is a beta release today. We as educators are more or less likely to experience the imposter syndrome that can occur sometimes in our practice. It's because we're more open to the fact that it's okay if it's not perfect. We're honest about what's working and what's not working as we improve and push forward. We avoid the crushing perfectionism that can lead to teacher burnout. I've seen so many great teachers leave the profession because they were convinced that they weren't good enough. Well, this helps prevent that kind of burnout. Our lessons are ultimately more creative and innovative as a result. There's a very slow, normal, almost unnoticeable element to innovation that happens when we continually move through iterations. When teachers are releasing in beta, they are constantly making little adjustments and testing out what's working. If you see a cool strategy or a new idea, you're not sure if it's going to work, go for it. Test it out, experiment, release it in beta. It might not turn out perfect, but that's okay. Kids don't need perfect. They need real. They need you. And over time, it's going to become better and better and even more creative. And more importantly, just like Javi, students are going to see that their teacher is not afraid to model creative risk-taking. You know, part of it really comes down to being willing to let go of perfectionism. And that can be really hard. In doing my dissertation on project-based learning and professional development, I read about all these different studies that show that teachers who are new to PBL often experience this period of like a disequilibrium. They can't tell if the strategies are working, they're unsure if they're doing it correctly. It can feel overwhelming and even scary. As I read the qualitative studies and then the quantitative survey data, I kept nodding and saying, yes, that was my experience too. Every time we try something new, we are taking a creative risk. We are admitting that our lessons might not be light or water. Sometimes they will be, well, crap. There will be mistakes. But the mistakes are the manure that help us grow. Teaching will be a mystery. A few years ago, I created this flowchart for the book Empower that I co-wrote with AJ Giuliani. So imagine it this way. Am I sure this will work? If the answer is yes, we end up with the status quo. But if the answer is no, then we enter the unknown. And that's where we have innovation. In other words, when we teach in beta, we recognize that every lesson is an experiment. We embrace this notion of the unknown. We recognize that even if our experiments didn't work, it's not actually a failed experiment. It's just a null hypothesis. The only failed experiment is the one we didn't attempt. If you don't have failed experiments, chances are you're not experimenting. Going back to this flowchart, I want you to think about the status quo. Status quo is not bad. We need the status quo to help us embrace best practices. We need the uncertainty to help us embrace the next practices. So again, what we could say is, am I sure this will work? If the answer is yes, we get best practices. If the answer is no, we get next practices. And the sweet spot in teaching is that overlap of best practices and next practices. If you never embrace the status quo, you run the risk of chasing the newest trend and falling victim to futurism. You never find solid ground. You fail to take the things that you worked on and build them and take them to the next level. We need the status quo. These are our tried and true best practices. At the same time, we need next practices. We need to step into the unknown and recognize that even if something is crappy, that's part of the innovation process as well. That's part of what it will mean to help us grow, and it is part of what will help our students grow as well. We need that overlap of the tried and true and the never tried. Teachers will always be at the heart of innovation. And innovation will always be about growth. And that growth is often mysterious and messy. That growth is about water and light and yes, even a little bit of crap. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get your podcast? And maybe tell someone about it. Word of mouth is one of the best ways to let people know about this podcast. So again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.